Hello and welcome to the Press Start Podcast. This week on the show, we're discussing our reviews of Tomodachi Life, Living the Dream and Pragmata. A bunch of Xbox news as well, including Game Pass getting a better value equation, Fable potentially getting delayed, Xbox exclusivity being re-reviewed, and Pete Hines firing some serious shots at Xbox management. I'm your host, Ewan. I'm still getting over a bit of a cold. I think you've already noticed my voice breaking a little bit, but I'm joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, James.
Hello.
And Harry.
Hello.
This is our weekly video game discussion podcast. Let's get on with the show. Let's start, Harry, with Tomodachi Life, Living the Dream. You submitted the review to the website. You can read it in full there. But what did you score, Tomodachi Life, Living the Dream? And how popular do you see the game being?
Yeah, I scored this game an 8. I think it's going to be immensely popular. Just because, I mean, just based on the reaction from on socials from the demo that dropped, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, I think a lot of people are really interested in this game. It's very unique. Like, I don't think there's anything quite like it. I think a lot of people will describe it as, like, Animal Crossing or Sims, but, like, the reality is that there's kind of nothing that really occupies the space that Tomodachi does. I think that was true of the first game as well, and it had a bit of a cult following. I think, like, with so many people having Switches and social media being the way that it is, I can definitely see the full release of this going quite viral. I think the people that, like, are into this sort of thing are really going to like it. And even if you're not, like, maybe it will interest you to just, I don't know, for me, it's not a game that, like, I particularly, well, not a genre type that I particularly get invested in, but it was fun to sort of unwind with every day for an hour or two and just enjoy some absurdity.
Yeah, I remember in your preview, you said, like, it kind of surprised you how much you did enjoy it, given it's not necessarily a genre that's firmly in your wheelhouse. You also praised, like, the fast pace of the opening hours. I take it it then did enough to maintain your interest throughout.
Yeah, I think like, it does a good job of rolling things out, not too fast and not too slow. I think, you know, when I think about the opening hours of New Horizons, I think there's probably a lot of people who saw that game and wanted to get to the good stuff and maybe didn't because it is pretty slow paced at the beginning. Tomodachi feels like it's constantly giving you new things. There's new stuff to experiment with. And, like, if you ever get, well, not that you'll get bored of the Miis on your island, but, like, you can have so many that you're always able to introduce, like, new social dynamics by bringing new Miis onto the island and sending them on expeditions and whatever else. Like, there's just so many things you can pick and play around with, and you know, switches you can hit, relationships you can, I guess, match make and sort of, like, curate yourself. So if you're into that sort of thing, you'll really, really like it. And I think like, there's sort of, like, sim elements, and you can build out your island as well. So there's, like, a little bit of construction maintenance in the way that you could in Animal Crossing as well, and that's all really easy to access and really seamless. It sort of gives you the tools from the start instead of it doesn't really feel like they're trying to, like, get you to progress towards anything. They want to get things into your hands without overwhelming you, and it wants you to play around with them and make your own fun with it.
We were kind of speculating about that in the lead up to this game releasing. Like, what were some of your favorite interactions you had between different Miis? Were there kind of some surprising ones in there?
I think in the early game, a lot of it is... Yeah, I've got one example.
They're not too X-rated, are they?
I think... No. I mean, obviously, a lot of it does come down to you, especially in the early game when, you know, you're forcing your Miis to talk with each other, and you choose the conversation topics or whatever. And this game has no filter at all, which, you know, is quite funny in certain scenarios. But, like, there was one situation where I had a Mii who had... romantic feelings for another and wanted to express such feelings, but instead of talking to that person, they wanted to blow them a kiss and sort of infatuate them. And as they did that, another Mii ran past and, like, caught the kiss, which then caused that Mii to fall in love with the other Mii. So it created this awkward romantic dynamic where, you know, this one Mii who had intended to sort of start something with another Mii got something else entirely. Just random stuff like that, and things you do early on where, like, you tell them that, like, to talk with a Mii about a certain conversation topic, they'll bring that topic up with other Miis, like, unprompted, and they'll ask questions about you. Like, they're aware that you're controlling them, and they'll talk to you, and they'll remember the things you tell them, and that makes for some funny moments as well when they randomly bring it up. Or yeah. There was one time where two Miis were having a conversation and they were like, I feel like we're being watched all the time. Like, and it's just clearly referencing the fact that they're being manipulated by a player. It's a good laugh.
Yeah. How do you think it kind of compares this year coming out alongside the likes of Pacopia? And I get that they're kind of different games, but perhaps speak to a similar sort of audience. Like, do you think it stands a leg above that, or do they kind of ultimately serve kind of two different purposes?
Yeah, I think they serve two different purposes. I think obviously Pacopia has appeal in that, like, people who are really into Pokemon will be interested in it. Like, I know people in my friend group who don't have Switch 2s and, like, aren't really hardcore gamers per se, but they like Pokemon, and so they're automatically interested in Pacopia. I think that, like, Tomodachi Life will have appeal in the same way, in that people will just see funny clips online and they'll want to get into it on their own. Like, how much staying power that has is another thing to be said, but yeah, I do think it appeals to a different kind of player and it provides a different kind of experience. I think it will do well, like, just on that alone. Like, I don't think it's really going to struggle to sell, because I think that, like, they're similar to Pacopia in that, like, it's a quote-unquote cozy game, but the overall gameplay experience is, like, different enough that, yeah, it has its own appeal, yeah.
Before we started recording, you and I were talking about spending time on Marathon, which I have to imagine is, like, just a totally different experience playing as opposed to this. You're deep into Tomodachi Life now. Can you see yourself continuing to pick it up kind of throughout the year and, I guess, like, just have a bit of a change of pace as you play other games throughout the year?
Potentially. I don't know. I think I've sort of had my fun with it after, you know, 30-35 hours. If they like add stuff to the game, maybe I can see myself coming back to it, but I think, like, you know, my backlog is already so long and there's going to be other stuff coming out this year that, like, I just want to spend time on things that I haven't quote-unquote finished or, you know, seen through to the end. So I can definitely see some people playing this for a long time, though, for sure.
Yeah. Is it something that speaks to you at all, James? Do you have much interest in going and picking this up?
Kind of. I get it, but then I'm the same with, like, Animal Crossing and even Pacopia. I get to a point where, like, I've played 20 hours, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, there isn't, I'm assuming, Harry, there's, like, no, like, goal or structure to it. Say, not, like, Pacopia has a story you play through.
Yeah, there isn't, like, an end game. I mean, there is in the sense, it's kind of like Animal Crossing in the sense that you're getting more stuff as you progress to do more things. There isn't necessarily, like, an end goal where you say, okay, I'm done now. Like, there isn't a credits roll moment where you put it down. Yeah, okay. So, yeah.
Did you put us on your island?
Maybe. Maybe not. You'll never know.
Oh, well, wow. That's a no. That's a hard no.
I hope it was me that caught your kiss, James.
Absolutely. I'm sure that's what happened.
I would have put it in the chat if that had happened.
It's just like in real life. Yeah. I don't. I think genuinely, though, I don't know. I do think, how quickly will this get old? And... this week we've had, like, no games come out, and then there's like at least three that I'm interested in that come out this week, so I think we have to do some triaging, and I don't know if Tomodachi's gonna make it.
Yeah. I think I'm in the same boat. It's kind of, I mean, I do hear you, Harry, when you say it's not your kind of game, but you kind of found a lot of fun with it, and that does make me curious, because I've never really been much of a sim guy. Like, I've dabbled a little bit in the Sims, but yeah, like, this does kind of just catch my eye purely for the zaniness of it. Am I right in thinking there's no, like, real multiplayer element to it, other than, like, can you visit each other's islands? Is that kind of the extent of it?
Yeah, I think so. There wasn't much in the... They usually don't have this stuff active unless the game is very multiplayer focused in the review period. So I didn't spend much time with it at all. But it is,
because I can see, like, if I was kind of bouncing off other people and, like, we were kind of leaning in and kind of making a bit of a joke of it, like, I can see that having a bit more appeal to me, sort of experiencing in the moment with a group like that. Yeah. But I'm kind of, I think, alongside James here. I've got very little doubt, though, that this game's going to find its audience and kind of have that same sort of viral success that we've seen in the past when these kind of clips come around. I'm curious, did you experiment with much of the kind of sharing functionality as well? Because I know that was a bit of a talking point, that they were kind of tapering that back a little bit. I think, like, the direct sharing to social media it was, but did you feel like you were able to kind of take screenshots and clips and stuff as much as you wanted?
I didn't really have as much of an issue, like, when I had funny interactions or whatever, and even the ones that I curated that, like, maybe necessarily you wouldn't put on social media. they were, yeah, I didn't have any issues at all. I definitely think that like this game will live by like people posting clips online. You know, people are going to see it, have a laugh, and they think, I want to do that, and they'll go and buy it for that reason. So yeah, I didn't really feel like there was any restrictions. I'd be interested to see if there's any sort of like day one update or anything that like tries to reel this stuff back in, given, you know, how crazy the demo was. But at the same time, I think like, you know, it's not content that like Nintendo is curating, like it's just in the hands of players. Yeah. So I don't know, could go either way.
I like seeing them hand over a little bit of control. It's funny, uncharacteristically Nintendo. Yeah. I hope I kind of get to live vicariously through other people playing this game with like, I can imagine a kind of a TikTok series coming out.
Absolutely.
following the lives and times of these Miis. I do want to get to another review of yours now though. And that is of course Pragmata. Firstly, James, how much of this do you want to hear? Because Harry and I were talking before the show, and I know you kind of want to go into the game without your experience being clouded too much. Like, do you want to just go on mute just now, or
no?
What do you
it's
want
to fine.
Do?
Just it's all right.
All right. Well, jump in with as many questions as you've got then, because I'm sure you're going to have plenty too. But Harry, yeah, you reviewed Pragmata. It's kind of caught my eye reading reviews the last day or two, just how divided opinion seems to be. But where did you come down on the game and why?
Yeah, I gave it an 8.5. To get like sort of my qualms out the way, I think the story is pretty forgettable. Like I do like Diana, who's the android that accompanies the main, well, it's sort of a dual protagonist game, but you play as a guy called Hugh, and Diana accompanies him through the story. And I liked her, and I thought she was really endearing, and her journey is one that like I got quite invested in. But kind of the overarching plot is pretty predictable. Its biggest twist you kind of see from a mile away. I don't think it is like really doing anything interesting. It's got some like good themes and ideas, but I don't think they spend enough time with them. That part I was kind of like here and there on, and it's very obvious what they wanted to do. I don't think they stuck the landing with it. But everything else I found to be really strong, especially for a game that was announced like almost 6 years ago now. You would have thought that there would be more issues with this, but I think it's really solid. The combat system in particular is just so good. A lot of people have likened it to character action games, which is I think is like a fair comparison. The games I would say it's most similar to is probably the modern Doom trilogy, in the sense that like combat encounters are sort of like puzzle boxes where you're juggling weapons and you're thinking about which targets you want to prioritize, and you want to learn enemy tells and how to dodge attacks and things like that. So the combat loop is super satisfying, really rewarding to master. It has some good challenge to it as well, if you're doing like some of the optional challenge rooms, and there's like a higher difficulty when you beat the game, new game plus, all that stuff. So I can see speedrunners really getting a kick out of this game. I think anyone who likes high action, thoughtful combat systems will really like it. Sort of in the same vein as like Resi 4 Remake and the Doom trilogy, where like you feel like you're kind of under the pump in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, even the very existence of a challenge room does sound very Doom coded. I've been slack and haven't played the demo of this game, so that's the first time I've heard that comparison drawn, and that excites me greatly. I did see some comparisons to Resident Evil games as well. Like, is there much to that beyond it being another Capcom game? Like, in any way, does the design feel similar?
A little bit. I think like the combat kind of feels a bit similar to RE4 in that it's not necessarily tense, but like you're juggling a lot at once and you're thinking about a lot at once and what you want to do. And it does have like a little bit of resource management, but it's never like putting you in the pressure cooker in regards to, oh, I'm about to run out of ammo and things like that.
Sure.
There's like consumable weapons that are powerful, and once you use them, they're gone. But like you always have a main weapon that never runs out of ammo. I would say the atmosphere is like definitely tense, but it's not scary. I can sort of see the comparisons a little bit, but it does very much so feel like its own thing.
And is it quite linear? You're not like looping back and
so like finding the general structure of the game,
a bolt cutter to open a door.
That's right.
Like that.
I mean, there kind of is, not necessarily that, but like the levels, the game is split into, I think it's 4-5 sectors, and They do have a linear progression, but sometimes like the main progression will be blocked and you need to explore and hack some switches to open a gate or whatever, and then you'll do a boss fight at the end. There's sort of this central hub area called the Shelter where like there are no enemies and you can like change suits and read up on data logs and upgrade your weapons and things like that. Choose a loadout before you leave and go to a sector. So yeah, it is quite linear with just some non-linear elements where you can sort of like venture off the beaten path for these challenge rooms and collectibles and so on. So yeah.
Nice. James, you're looking, you're sat there kind of, I can't read your face. Are you skeptical? Are you just absorbing
it? No, I was absorbing. When you said that the critics are divided, I just went and read like all the reviews, and I don't think anyone's divided you. And I feel like it's all
it was like, what maybe are you talking about? Most of the listening into the kind of funny guys talking on the podcast today. They did vary a little bit, but
I mean, that's four people, but there's like 85 positive reviews on Meta and 3 mixed and none.
You're just sitting there seething, going, I will not take this Capcom.
No, I'm not seething.
I just set the record straight.
No, I just think, like, I just wanted to know because I genuinely didn't know what the spread was, and the spread isn't even that much.
Yeah.
I think you're wrong.
No.
I'm pretty narrow personally, I'm personally pretty happy that. I think in a world where, like, even Capcom, like, it's franchises, franchise after franchise for them, like Street Fighter, Monster Hunter, I mean, Onimusha now, to a certain extent, Resident Evil, obviously, they still have time to kind of try new things, and I kind of like that this doesn't seem to be just another third-person shooter. I feel like single-player shooters alone are quite rare these days, but then to have that be successful and also be quite different is really cool. And I agree with, I think Harry was saying, like, it's been, what, 6-7 years or something since it was announced.
Yeah, it was announced in 2020.
Yeah, so, like, normally when usually games... I feel like, disaster. In general, right, yeah, when games take that long to come out, they either are behind the trends that they were chasing at the time or whatever. Like, there's just was something underneath, and it sounds like they kind of nailed it, which is good.
I wanted to ask you Harry, because I've jumped in, James. Ask. I'm sorry.
No,
you
it's go. Fine. Harry, I was going to ask. There was a point where I think I said to you, like, what's the catch? Because, like, I did feel like there was some kind of shortcoming that was, like, going to rear its head. And you said you thought it might be pretty short. But I think when I skimmed your review, you said it wasn't. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. When we spoke about that, I was at a point where I felt like it was going to end, and the way that it was structured, I thought it was coming soon as well. But yeah, there was more than I had anticipated. It doesn't feel like bloated or anything. And I think it's sort of, it ends before it runs out of ideas. I think it's a good length. It took me about 10 hours to hit credits. And I did a fair chunk of the optional content as well. I fully completed the first area and like 70% plus on all the other areas. And I did most of the training simulations as well. And then there's also post-game content. So like there's New Game Plus, you unlock a new difficulty, and there is story content post-game as well.
That's cool.
So there's a fair bit here.
And is it worthwhile?
The other reason I thought, yeah, it was good. I can't talk about it, unfortunately, but I like it. I think it's worthwhile. I think the challenge rooms are super worthwhile as well, because that's when the combat is like at its best. Yeah, and I think this has a lower price tag than a typical AAA release nowadays. It's like 92 Australian, I think.
Yeah, digital.
So that kind of led me to digitally
crazy. That
led me to believe it was going to be on the shorter side. But yeah, I think the length is perfect. I wouldn't have wanted it any longer.
Nice. That like strong gameplay, huge wins in my book. Like I think I'll kind of like take a serviceable plot, like especially if there's still interesting characters within a pretty serviceable plot. I'm really this might be top of my list of like games I want to dive into pretty soon.
When I watched the trailers, even though I thought the gameplay looked good, I did think Diana seemed a bit annoying. Do you think she's annoying? Do you think people will find her annoying or nah? No,
I don't think so. No, I think she's not,
okay.
Yeah, she does talk a fair bit, but I wouldn't say that like it's yappy or like in the same way that people perceive companions in modern gaming, like how people say like Mimir and God of War is annoying or whatever. Like she's not pointing out stuff. Like I think the one thing they really lean into with her and why she's endearing. So she herself is a Pragmata, which is basically an AI or an android. And they lean, and she's young as well. Like, she's modeled to be a child, and she has the, like, the mental age of a child as well. She doesn't understand certain concepts. She doesn't understand certain things. So she bounces off Hugh and asks him questions about things. So it never really feels like they're just making her talk for, like, comedic effect or to cut the tension or whatever. Like, she has genuine questions. She wants to know about the world. She wants to know about Earth. And, you know, the people she spent time with on the station and things like that. So that's what makes her endearing. And she does have sort of that childlike side to her. Sometimes when you're in the shelter, she'll bring you, like, drawings and stuff that she did with, like, her crayons and whatever. And, like, that's really cute. And there's some really nice moments with that. So, yeah, I think she's extremely well handled.
Does Hugh like her? Is it? Is it something that develops over time?
Yeah, it's something that develops. He's pretty apprehensive at first, and then, you know, you can imagine how it goes. But I think, like, the main reason the plot doesn't really work for me is because I don't think he's very interesting. He's a bit of a wooden plank, to be honest. I totally see what they were going for, but I just needed more with him in terms of, like, backstory motivations and why he is the way that he is. But yeah, like, she's a great character, but yeah, he's just kind of flat.
And given this is, like, a new IP as well, like, what's the world building like? Have they constructed a world you'd like to see a sequel in, or kind of more exploration within?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would like to see if they could take the core loop further. This tells a very contained story. Like, they don't really leave any room for, you know, like, a follow-up or anything like that. I think it ends in quite a nice way. I don't know, like, yeah, and part of it is because I wasn't so hot on the story. Like, I don't really care much for the worlds. Like, I think the moon base is interesting, and visually it's really pretty, and, like, but, like, the, like, when you find out what happened there, like, I don't know, and what they're doing,
yeah, okay,
like that, I just it,
I guess I was curious of, like, if interest, the plot, like, itself was a bit, like, just ho-hum,
yeah, it's a bit thin,
otherwise it was a cool setting and, like, a cool world, but yeah sounds like it's kind of all just a bit.
Could they make another game?
I don't know.
Like, do you reckon, like, if they went to Mars and there's, like, I don't know, a different Pragmata, and or they make it, like, an anthology kind of vibe, like,
you know, outside of finding, like, a narrative justification for it, I don't know how much further you can take this gameplay loop. It feels like they really flesh out the hacking stuff. They introduce a lot. And, you know, sort of when you start and you get halfway through, you think, like, wow, they're doing a lot with this already. But they keep going. Like, there's stuff sort of introduced until you're, like, 80% through the game.
Yeah, nice.
And it feels really fleshed out. And that's why the combat feels so good, especially the late game challenges and things like that. So I don't know what they would do or where they can take it other than just iterate on it. And I don't know how that would hold up if it was, like, another 8 to 10 hour experience. Maybe a DLC. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I certainly feel like I'm sold on it. I can't wait to dive in and play it. And 8.5 as well. Like, is this sitting pretty high in your kind of games of the year sort of consideration list as well? Like, is it up there now?
I think it's probably sitting in my top 10, but I don't know, it's been a pretty stacked early days, front half of the year for me. Like, I sort of have a clearly defined top three already, that, and it doesn't really come close to
Mugenics,
those,
so. Marathon.
Yeah, Mugenics, Marathon, and probably Slay the Spire too. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair. All right, well, we'll be back in a moment to dig into this Xbox news, but let's just take a quick break now and be back in a moment. All right, Xbox time. New Xbox boss Asha Sharma has said in an internal memo that Xbox Game Pass needs, quote, a better value equation. The comment comes after relaunching the service late last year with new pricing tiers, dramatically increasing the cost of the monthly subscription fee. James, I'm going to come to you first on this one. Asha Sharma obviously pointing to improvements in the value equation. Do you think it remains good value as it is, or is it out of whack, as she might suggest?
It really depends, right? Like, I personally think, like, if you're somebody who, I don't know, plays, say, Forza this year, Fable, Hades,
we'll get
2,
to that.
Like, yeah, no, yeah, sorry, I haven't read ahead. But, yeah, but, like, but, yeah, I think I know a lot of people. I don't know if this is anecdotal, but I know, yeah, I want to say 3 to 5 people in my close circle who have cancelled now. That was just a little bit. I'm still there. I find something to play, I want to say, every 2 weeks, I would say. Every 2 months, not so much, but yeah. I do think they maybe need to, but I don't know. I think it's... I feel like what's happening now is with new leadership and such, I feel like they're chasing a different goose now, right? Like, I do think that... and does Game Pass fit with that still? But they also probably are in a situation where they can't really take it away either, so they do need to maybe optimize it to that point where more people grab it again. But I don't think they're maybe aiming for, you know, X amount of subs at this point.
To get a little nerdy for a second, because this, like, this discussion of like a value equation took me back to my days studying marketing at university, where they talk about this concept of value equation being benefits minus cost, right? And cost could be financial cost, or it could be like psychological cost or whatever. There's a few different elements to it. And benefit is like all the kind of psychological benefits, utility benefits, that sort of thing. And so I did wonder if, like, well, maybe she says a better value equation, it's about increasing the benefits, so like getting better games in there, as she's already talked about, not necessarily reducing the financial cost. I think that would align pretty closely with everything she's been talking about recently of like, okay, we can charge what we're charging, but we just need to make sure it gets good games.
I just hope that doesn't manifest though as like, you know, oh, you know how they tried to when they upped the price, like, but now you get Fortnite Garage or whatever the fuck it's called, like that. All those like weird.
That was part of the like changes last year.
It's not a better value equation for everyone that has Game Pass. Like, if you don't play Fortnite, like, then what is it doing for you?
Like, even if you, I don't know. Let's say, I mean, this is a maybe this is quite dramatic, but I don't know, 15% off digital purchases or something. Like, as if you're on the highest tier or something like that, or some kind of like cash back. I know Microsoft used to do reward points, but I don't know if they still do. Just like something like that. I don't know. So people, even if it feels like nothing, like 5% off or something, I think that will feel like something long-term for people. It isn't physically heaps, but it feels like something to people who maybe are on the fence or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's a fair point. For me, I said I cancelled mine. I did renew it the second that I was like, okay, well, I want to go back and play more Clair Obscur, and I didn't own the game. So I was like, well, I'll just fire up my Game Pass subscription for a month, and then I let it roll over another month. So like immediately kind of back in, I suppose. And as soon as you do that math of like, well, I could go and buy the game for like close to $100 right now, or I could spend $30 for the month and play that and whatever the game like catches my eye in that time. So I think there is still a value there, but yeah, value is always subjective. To your point, James.
I think people were always doing that though. Decide. I think genuinely people were always doing that, but I think more people do that now. I think people do that more now than they used to. At the same time.
Back when it was like $20 a month, like it was kind of pretty easy just to like roll on.
Yeah, whatever.
Knowing that I might come and go a little bit, but it's nice just to always have there. But yeah, I'm much more selective now, I guess, which is the way I get across like subscriptions more broadly, I would argue. You mentioned Fable earlier. According to a report from Jeff Grubb, Fable has been delayed internally to avoid releasing alongside or too close to Grand Theft Auto 6. And it could fall into 2027, seeking a kind of optimal release window as well. You're shaking your head at that, James. I take it you think that's unlikely?
No, I just think they're stupid. I don't know. This game is like cursed.
It needs to go.
Like, I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. It. Like. What do you stop wasting money on it? Like. I'm sure it's good. And I'm sure. Yeah, isn't it GTA? Is GTA end of November?
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Chuck this out in October. I don't know.
Do you think like December just really is cursed? That kind of does feel like December is shit.
I think because December is like everyone's kind of already done their Christmas shopping. They're not really thinking about new games. They don't want to buy a new game because they've got to waste, like, think about their money they're spending on gifts for everyone else. Like, and then the dust settles and Capcom puts out a really good game in February and everyone is like has moved on with their lives. So like that's what happens every year, right?
Code Veronica. It's also not game of the year award consideration too, which I think, let's be honest.
Yeah, but that doesn't really move money. Like, I don't think at the end of the day. Like, I think some people bought.
You don't think it does long term?
No way. I don't think so either. Not at all. Not with the normies.
I think it just benefits to be on lists, doesn't it?
Nah.
Like from an SEO perspective, you can, it's like...
You can feel that way, but it's not correct. But I don't know. Like, who cares? Like, I know it's like fun to talk about for like 3 weeks after, but then we just, move on. And like, you're thinking about, like real talk, who's talking about Claire Obscure still, like now, 4 months into this
year? I'm not like, saying... At the time, it was getting heaps of awards, though. People were... purchasing the game.
I agree. And I'm saying, yes, I agree for like a week, like a, or 2 weeks, but like, I don't think,
that's like a spike in sales that you'll get like 9 months after release.
You're not listening to me. I'm talking about like long term. Like, I just don't think my camera is blurry. Can you fix that? You end with your magic.
I don't think it factors into how they release a game or when they release.
Yes, like, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying this publisher isn't like, oh fuck, we need to put out a game. Like, I don't think
to it too. I think people like being part in the consideration, and it does help sales.
I just don't think that Playground has a choice, first of all. And I also don't think Microsoft cares at the end of the day. I think it's money in the bank. At some point, they don't get more just because it might have been nominated for Game of the Year, personally.
Yeah.
I think it's also like, you know, if they hold off till next year or whatever to be considered for Game of the Year instead of releasing in December, if they're trying to dodge GTA or whatever, like that's like money they're spending on development still, right? Because presumably... they're going to use the time to polish and work on it or whatever. And even if they don't spike in sales, does that offset how much they're spending, you know, in the 3 month period that it's delayed if it's coming out in February or whatever?
I just feel like this game is hemorrhaging money, like this project. And it's been so long.
It's been going for so long.
It's been rumored for so long. It's been on. It's just like, let's fucking get it out. Like, get some money back for them. You know,
yeah, I'm also not convinced that Grand Theft Auto coming out necessarily means everyone stops buying every other game that's like released the month.
I know what you're saying, but like, some people will buy that game and then, how many of the people who are going to buy GTA and play that for the rest of their life are people who are going to buy Fable anyway?
Like, yeah, exactly. That's my point. Like, yeah, you know, you're more kind of hardcore
there isn't
gamer.
A lot of crossover.
What it does do though is sucks up a lot of oxygen and like time, like I don't know, online discourse that might otherwise like come
That's
the way of your
point,
game
yeah.
gets diverted towards GTA.
Even clip sharing and
writing for press, clip sharing, editorial coverage, like the views are gonna sit with GTA, so you're gonna prioritize that content over other games. So I think that's also like a factor of it as well. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm kind of tempted to say, if you're going to avoid November, it can't come out any sooner than that, then maybe delay it to like January, February. The game could be done. Like, they could work on other projects and just ship it later. Potentially.
Yeah.
It's not going to save Game Pass one way or another. To bring some more Xbox news into this discussion, though, Jez Gordon as well was speaking on his podcast and said that there's very, very, very big discussion about exclusivity stuff happening internally at Xbox. James, going back to the first comment I think you made on this topic, does seem to be a bit of a strategic readjustment, putting it mildly, at Xbox in the wake of the leadership changes. Would you welcome them revisiting their exclusivity arrangement and maybe kind of doubling down on the walled garden of Xbox once again? Assuming that's what this is. It could be like, we're doing timed exclusives or we're not doing exclusives. It's just...
I also feel like I feel like all the shit Jez Corden says doesn't happen.
Some of it might still be to play out.
It's also like so vague. So it's kind of like, yeah, something will happen. You're like, yeah, this is what I meant. Yeah, like, I don't know. The leakers need to like chill. But I don't know. They would have data. I feel like when like Sea of Thieves and Forza 5 came out, they all both did pretty well, like on PlayStation 5.
For sure.
5.
I think Xbox was the biggest publisher on PlayStation for a period of time.
Yeah. Given those,
and
I feel like...
games. I don't know how Valve's done, or Indie.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, that's actually, that's a really good point. I forgot about those. And then I was literally about to say, I don't think Starfield has moved the needle. I don't think anyone's talking about that game in any different way, but no. Beyond saying that the new DLC sucks and the game is just a constant disappointment. So I think it might be time to move on, personally.
The DLC sucks and it's also what the game should have been from day one. Like, it's...
Yeah, and if, yeah.
It's a tricky spot.
It is, yeah. I feel bad for that team, whoever they are.
Yeah,
But I maybe... Long term, I mean, when I look at, like, say, something like Project Helix and whatever that is, and I'm like, what's the point? Like, there's just, yeah, I can kind of maybe see them going back on exclusivity, but I just don't see the point at this point when the games aren't that good. Like, I'm not, I think not,
that's
not
the,
good.
That's yeah. the key thing, right? That, like, it's, yeah, like, it's so hard to pivot back to that when they're not at, in a position where people have Xbox consoles. Like, it's all well and good that they're going to make these games exclusive and, like, the next Halo can be the best thing since sliced bread. But if no one has a fucking Series X, no one's going to buy it. And, like, not...
It's the Wii U situation. Especially now that... Again, yeah, like, exactly, it's literally... Exactly. It reminds me so much of what was happening with the Wii U, where Xbox has been in, like, to me, like, a worse position than Nintendo, where, like, you know, you're just kind of waiting for that next game to kind of save your platform, and it never happened.
But and the they thing knew is, all is, those like, games were good because they brought them all to the Switch and they all sold buckets.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they were all good. Like, it was just frustrating because they would never sell. But then, yeah, like, I don't see Helix being a Switch for Microsoft in that way. But maybe it is. Who knows? And then that is a point. I feel like with the Game Pass thing and the exclusivity, and I feel like everything like that was just these constant kind of Hail Marys to try and get, like, things back for them as a brand. Just in terms of, like, money or sentiment from gamers or whatever. And now that we've got this, like, new leadership who's kind of less interested in kind of... What's the word? Kind of, like, I want to say less interested in, like, trying to just, like, do whatever they can. They're more... I think feel
they're thinking
like
more long-term, yeah.
The strategy feels, a little bit more considered and not this, like, kind of... not reactionary.
In the moment.
It feels a little bit more proactive in what... In my mind, I feel like they have a better idea of what they want to do, like, already. Like, that's the vibe that I get. I mean, I don't know. We don't know anything, right? Maybe they're faking it until they make it as well.
I mean, I just think I welcome the soul searching. Like, I think it was messy. Like, that much was clear. Yeah. Like, there was not a lot of consistency in anything they were doing. It wasn't kind of clear what their strategy was, and mixed messaging come out. So I do think some reevaluation was required, and clearly, like, internally as well, like, that this is an Xbox campaign caused a lot of division. So I think just, like, cleaning slate, picking the best parts, getting rid of the worst, and getting everyone back on the same page would do a world of good. And it's not to say that exclusivity comes back in the same sort of way that it once was, but it'd just be great if they went, okay, one of our first party games is going to be exclusive to our platforms and PC maybe for the first 12 months, and therefore it could come to PlayStation, but always 12 months it's going to be exclusively ours, something like that. I think they have got themselves a little bit tied up in knots with the kind of like the promises they made to the FTC in order to make the acquisitions that they did, so that's probably complicated things a little bit, but I reckon they could probably make the case that, like, well, we're still supporting multi-platform and all of that, we're just doing it on our own terms. I think they could get away with that. I'm not saying that's necessarily right, but for them, like, as a business and preserving Xbox hardware, I would suggest that's probably the way to go about it. Obviously not consulting for Xbox though, so who knows what they'll do. The last little bit of Xbox news I wanted to bring in, because it was, like, far too juicy to leave for another day, that is that the former Bethesda's senior VP and head of publishing, Pete Hines, has taken fire at Xbox management in a very candid interview with the Fireside Chat. He stayed at the company longer than he intended after the acquisition by Xbox, and said that he saw how it was getting damaged and broken apart and, frankly, mistreated, abused. Bethesda is just part of something that is not authentic and is not genuine, and that shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. That shouldn't be a surprise to you, was the quote. There were so many quotes I could have pulled out of this interview, but he clearly has taken a pretty dim view as to what the nature of Xbox management is, and I guess like how Bethesda is now managed as a result of it as well. What's your take on this, Harry? Do you think Xbox is an inauthentic place? Does that summarize like what we've been discussing today?
Yeah, pop off, Pete. I think that, like, I don't know if inauthentic is the right word. I think they always had good intentions with the merger and these studios, but it has been fundamentally mismanaged. Like, that's the truth of it. I mean, the fact that, like, Arkane Austin was shut down so quickly after Redfall shat the bed, and then Tango as well. I was thinking the other day as well, like, what is going on at id? Like, the Dark Ages came out like a year ago, and it's meant to be getting DLC, and we've not heard a peep. Like, I don't think they have handled these studios properly. I think they need to, like, and this ultimately comes back to the exclusivity strategy and whatever they plan on doing long term. Like, the first step needs to be, like, look at your studios, invest in the people, get like exciting creative projects going. Like, I don't know. I don't think, like, the way that sort of first couple of years of the merger unfolded inspires confidence. And maybe new leadership will shake it up a bit and we'll see something different. But, yeah, I do think that studios have been mismanaged. Like, I mean, you can make the argument that, like, Arkane Austin after Redfall, like, obviously that game was abysmal. But, like, I just don't understand in what world, like, why they ever closed Tango. Like, that will forever boggle my mind. I just think it was like a silly decision. Yeah.
And given like he was kind of testifying as like part of the sort of proceedings around acquisitions as well, like I feel like representations were probably made to him about like how the business would operate and what sort of free reign, I guess, Bethesda were going to be afforded. And certainly that was like the messaging at the time, right? Like it was, we're not going to interfere too much in like the creative decision making of the developers and the publishers and their studios, da 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 da. And yeah, maybe that just eroded over time or was pretty disingenuous from the onset. I do take it what he says a little bit with a pinch of salt. Like, I'm sure there were plenty of factors sort of being considered. And I don't think anyone that played Redfall could kind of stand by that being like much of a good decision. But yeah, it does, I guess, assuming there's some truth to sort of what he's saying, and I think we probably would suggest there would be, it's a pretty dim reflection of what it's like internally over there. James,
yeah, there are just,
I'm going to pull up some
indicative
more
of it being poor at the moment. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to pull out some more of these quotes, but James, what are your thoughts on it so far?
I don't know. I don't really like Pete Hines. I don't think, I don't know. I think he was trying to be, I don't know. I just never liked him.
He's always been a tough operator. Like, I'll say that. Yeah. Like, reading this today didn't surprise me whatsoever.
He was always trying to, like, be, like, a Reggie, not, like, in that way, but, like, I don't know. He always struck me as trying to be, like, a personality. And I was like, yeah, cool, whatever. But I believe him when he says stuff about that, especially, like, under Phil. I do believe all of that. I don't think it's like that anymore, though. That's how I feel. I don't know. I just think, like, when you get sucked up in a big publisher like that, that's always going to happen. I feel like that's always going to be the sentiment. I don't think I've ever heard that not being the vibe. But yeah.
Yeah,
so
I will say, like,
words,
he's always,
I didn't really say anything.
On Pete Hines, like, he's always struck me, I've only had the opportunity to interview him the one time, and that was quite memorable because I asked him about how they sort of managed crunch at Bethesda because it was in light of some Rockstar news at the time. And he said something to the effect of, like, I don't want to touch that with a 12-foot pole, which it was, as an interviewer, it's like an intimidating thing to hear in response. But yeah, when he always struck me as, like, he didn't say anything he didn't mean, and was a pretty straight shooter in that regard. So I would definitely understand if, you know, Xbox publicly was saying one thing and then behind the scenes saying something else, that rubbing him entirely the wrong way. And to his point as well, like, another quote in here is that That he felt powerless to do what was needed to run the place properly and maintain what they worked so hard to create, which was an incredibly efficient, well-run video game developer and publisher. And I think prior to the Xbox acquisition, you really could say that Bethesda were kind of operating at their peak. And like they were putting out kind of great games. They could support a showcase of their own and have a really impressive roster. And like what they were doing, like Wolfenstein and Doom and Fallout was all pretty cool. Not to say that it was a perfect run, but like even now, like Elder Scrolls 6 being kind of so far down the road, that feels very different to like Fallout 4 being announced and releasing, what was it, 3 months later? Something like that. So yeah. I don't know. It does feel like culturally they have been somewhat consumed by Xbox.
I agree, but I also can't help but feel that they would still be in the same position
with or without Xbox.
I just think like, yeah, I do agree. Like I remember 1 year, I remember being really impressed that I think Bethesda basically made Dishonored 2 like their big game. For that year at their thing, and I think that was really cool that like the year before they had Fallout 4 maybe or something, and then they were like, yeah, we're going to treat Dishonored with like the same amount of like, I guess, like respect and reverence and stuff. But I do think that well would have dried up eventually anyway. Like I think the stars just aligned with all the games that they had ready to go, and then they would have been hit by like, say, Starfield being not as good as people had hoped, and I think they maybe would have even been in a worse position potentially.
Yeah, and I don't think like Fallout 76, Starfield, Redfall, like I don't think Xbox can bear the blame of any of that.
No, I don't think the quality would have changed, but I do feel like maybe the output has. I don't know.
Yeah,
I just think all
games.
I
get the sense it's a cultural issue more so than anything. Yeah,
I mean everything is slowing down, but I do think that like Bethesda was still putting stuff out before the merger happened. Like to go back to Doom, like they released Eternal in like March of 2020, and I think they had both DLCs for that game out within the year. And like the Dark Ages, which is like of the same scale content-wise, maybe a little bit longer than Eternal. Like we haven't heard like anything about. I think that's meant to be getting one DLC, maybe, but there is story DLC planned, and like nothing. It's been 11 months.
Yeah,
like,
that's crazy.
I don't know. It raises a red flag to me. Like,
yeah, yeah. Well, fingers crossed. Asha Sharma gets everything shipshape. And truth be told, like I know there's been a bit of doom and gloom discussing this Xbox news. Seems like that's often the case as of late. I think there are some indications within this that like the kind of strategic like strategy being reviewed, them talking about the value equation of Xbox, like that does give me a little bit of hope that things will improve.
Even like, I mean...
Okay.
What?
Go on.
What?
No, I sensed you were about to jump in with something, so I was leaving you the room, and then nothing was happening.
No, I just think this is. I mean, maybe this was already on the books or whatever, but there's been a lot of system updates for Xbox in the last 2-3 months that a lot of people have been asking for a long time, and they just like seem to be rolling out a lot of stuff like that quite quickly. I'm not kind of naive enough to think that maybe this has happened since that she was put in place, but it does feel like shit seems to be getting done right now, which I kind of felt an air of that before, but now I feel it's a bit more definitive. I mean, I could be wrong, but
yeah, reasonably positive. That's good. I like that we can end it on that note. that would be good. Yeah. I do have some rapid-fire questions for the two of you before we move to What the Wiki. CinemaCon has been happening this week, and Sony Pictures announced an R-rated animated adaptation of Bloodborne with Jacksepticeye attached as a producer. Harry, would you rush to the movie theater to see an animated Bloodborne film?
I'll be there day one.
Hell yeah. I reckon this could be really cool. I love that, like, R-rated animated. I think it ticks a few cool boxes. James?
No.
Stop. Well,
stop playing. Like, stop playing with the IP. Like, just do. You know, stop dancing around it. Like, let's just fucking do something with it. Anyway,
I must admit, when I saw like Bloodborne notifications blowing up on my phone, I got a little excited, and then I saw it was an animated movie, and I'm like, really? That's odd. Anyhow. Also during CinemaCon, it was announced that the filming of the live-action film adaptation of The Legend of Zelda has wrapped. We've been hearing a bit recently about the location in New Zealand, I think reusing a bunch of the Lord of the Rings locations and sceneries and backdrop. I personally am very excited for this film. But James, what are your interest levels out of 10?
Let's flip this. What do you think they are?
Okay. I reckon a 6. I think you're like, you'll see it, but you're nervous. You're apprehensive about it.
Harry, what do you think?
Like, interest, and defining interest as like your interest in the project, not necessarily your excitement or if you think it'll be good, is probably like a solid 8 or a 9.
It's a 7.
So, you're splitting the difference.
I don't know. No, I genuinely don't know. I mean, I'm sure. I don't know. Does Link speak? There's just like so many weird little things about Zelda that I don't know how they translate to like
the
screen. You know.
Yeah, I like that they've kind of picked two relatively unknown cast members so far. I think the location obviously seems like such a no-brainer. I don't know an awful lot about the film so far, I guess. But yeah, that alone is reason enough for me to be hopeful. All right, What the Wiki is the Press Start podcast game show where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page for an unknown game, and we, the contestants, must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess, with a round concluding after someone's bagged themselves 2 points. James, you're currently in the lead on 12 points. Harry, you're tied in second place with Brody on 8 points. And Shannon and myself round out the podium on 7 points apiece. I won last week, much to my delight, which means I'm in the hosting chair this week for what feels like the first time in a long, long time. So, contestants, if you're ready, I have some games prepared for you. And as I love to do, there is a theme as well, so bear that in mind. Game number one. The game is a life simulation game with action-adventure elements, having a more role-playing video game tone than past games in the franchise. The storyline of the game is to build a successful kingdom by fulfilling the player's kingdom ambition, which the player chooses at the start of the game. Once an ambition has been completed, the player will unlock new ambitions for future... James...
Is this that, like, Kingdom of Keflings game?
I do need you to, like, provide a title of a game. Like, is that Kingdom of Keflings? Is that the title?
Yeah, let's go that.
Okay. It's not correct, no.
Oh, okay.
Sorry to say.
Harry? Is it Kefling Kingdom?
No. No. I like where your headspace is at, but no. Oh, I'm barking up the wrong tree. The major difference in gameplay from previous installments is the quest-driven system. With the game stopped, the player has to choose a quest. Quests are required to fulfill said kingdom ambition, and then choose which hero they want to use. A Pirates and Nobles-themed expansion pack was released in North America on August 30th, 2011. This pack features a new kingdom ambition, new traits and legendary traits, new clothes, over 140 new objects, including an interrogation chair, new quests, and new social interactions. There is also a new treasure hunting mechanic with maps, shovels, treasures, and dangers. Additionally, the pack introduced pets, new NPC pirates, and a new creature, Baby Pit Beast, which is a new type of character death. The game is a life simulation game that was released in March 2011 by Electronic Arts for Microsoft Windows and Mac OS X as part of the Sims series. Mobile versions were released on September 22, 2011 for iOS, Java, and also the Windows phone.
James. Is it My Sims Kingdoms?
Not Kingdoms, no.
Fuck off,
it is,
man.
It is The Sims something.
Oh, James. Oh, can I go?
let me give Harry Ryder a reply and then we'll come back to James. Harry, do you want to have a guess?
I'm not going
to
get it because I have no idea. Is it My Sims Castles?
No. Definitely, you're definitely in the wheelhouse now. James, do you think you know it?
Is it The Sims Medieval?
It is The Sims Medieval. Well done, James. Yeah, had no idea this existed, but a Sims game with an interrogation chair. Yeah. Incredible.
Really?
Wow, fantastic.
I was not a Sims guy, but maybe had I known The Sims Medieval existed, I would have been a Sims guy.
I was at. This is a. I'm going to. Oh, no, actually, it doesn't matter.
No. Right. Tell me a story. Go for it. I'm curious now.
This is a core memory of one of my friends. She listens to this show as well. We were at a presentation for work, and they were showing us some games, and it was a trailer that was really vague, and it was like a bear ripping a person to shreds. And she leaned over to me, and she was like, "I think it was a trailer for The Witcher," but she was like, "Sims Medieval," and I was like, I don't think so, but maybe we'll see. And then obviously it was
like, I wonder if this game is still like playable on iOS. Like, could I be playing this on my phone on the tram tomorrow morning?
Surely you can get on Origin or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember it was cool because it was like, you know, The Sims but medieval. Like, that's cool.
Yeah. Wow. I was amazed. It's like quests and torture devices. Yeah, it's crazy.
It was like, yeah. I vibe with that. Anyway.
Alrighty. Game number two, then. To stay in the hunt, Harry. The game was to be called White Knuckle for the majority of the game's development, developed by Scottish game designer Chris Sawyer. The game was developed in a small village near Dunblane over the course of 2 years. Sawyer programmed the game with graphics designed by artist Simon Foster using several 3D modeling, rendering, and paint programs. Initially, Sawyer used family and friends to help playtest the game, and then turned to Hasbro, the publisher, to help complete more extensive bug testing and feedback. For his efforts, Sawyer made around $30 million in royalties. The Xbox port was handled by Frontier Developments, who would later go on to develop the franchise's third mainline entry. In the game, the player may hire handymen to sweep paths, empty garbage bins, water flowers, and mow lawns. Mechanics to inspect and fix rides, security guards to prevent vandalism within the park, and James. Entertainers to entertain guests. James.
Is it Scream Ride?
It's not Scream Ride, no.
Fuck.
A little bit more to go with the paragraph. You got a good chance here, Harry. The geography and landscaping of the park can be modified, allowing the player to lower/raise terrain and add water to improve the park's attractiveness, as well as to allow rides to fit into those surroundings more easily. Harry.
Is it Roller Coaster Tycoon?
It is Roller Coaster Tycoon. Well done, Harry. Released in 1999, Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Wow, 99.
Alrighty, means we go to a tiebreak decider. I reckon you guys could be quick on this one as well, so pay attention. Both of you leaning in right now. I love this. Yeah. Alright. The game allows the player to develop a species from a microscopic organism.
James.
Harry?
Is it Spore?
It is Spore. One of the handful of sim games that I have played. That keeps it interesting, Harry. I respect that. The come from behind.
I don't think James respects it, but
so with that, James, you did pick up a point, so you've defended your lead.
Yeah, whatever.
Well there. You're on 13 points, Harry, now in second on 10 points, Brody in third on 8, and Shannon and myself bringing up the rear, although I could move ahead and tie with Brody back on third. Should I get a trivia question correct, Harry?
Yeah, we do have, or I have trivia prepared for you, Ewan. You have two games to choose from.
Oh, great.
As per our discussion pre-podcast. So you either have The Last of Us or Jack 2.
Two of my favorite Naughty Dog games. I'm tempted to say Jack 2 because, like, what a game. But I feel Jack like 2. I'm more likely to get trivia correct for The Last of Us. So let's go The Last of Us. Although the last time I did this, I got it wrong. So let's see.
So you're going The Last of Us?
Yeah. Is it multiple choice? Okay. Please be multiple choice.
It is multiple choice.
All right. Good.
What does Ellie keep of Riley's in The Last of Us Left Behind?
Don't
be so sure, James.
Really, you have answered it already. Is it A, a CD player, B, a joke book, C, a plushie, or D, poetry?
I think it's the joke book, B.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
It is the joke book.
Thank God. I'm not going to lie. The first thing that came to my mind was a watch. And I was like, nope, that's wrong character.
I should have thrown the watch in there.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you. It's nice to be on the receiving end of some easier trivia questions. With that, then, let's bring an end to what was this week's episode of the Press Start podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener, the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at press.au and visit the site at press.com.au. We've been joined today by Harry.
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter at Harry_Callo, and please go read my Pragmata and Tomodachi Life reviews.
And rocking the X-Files t-shirt, go to our YouTube version to check that out in person. It was James. fashion shirt.
Yeah,
fashion
I'm on shirt. Twitter at James, A-T-J-M-Z, or I'm also on Blue Sky. I'm playing through the Star Fox games at the moment. So if you want to see my
commentary.
Very good, I reckon.
We were talking about Star Fox Adventures last week.
Yeah, were we?
So how many more have you played since then? Yeah.
I'm done now, officially. Yeah, I'm all ready for that new game, if it exists. Might not. after all that, I did all that for nothing, but that's okay. Yeah, cool. Great chat.
I love it. And I've been your host, Ewan. I've managed to make it through the show without losing my voice entirely. Hopefully, I've not sounded too croaky. You can follow me on socials at Ewan_Roxburgh. We'll be back again next week. But until then, happy gaming.
Bye.